welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, December 14th, 2010. That's right, I said Tuesday. When Yvonne and I were going to record our show on Sunday, as we have been lately, Yvonne was on a boat somewhere. I don't know exactly where his boat was, but he was going to dial in from Skype anyway, and we were going to talk, but he couldn't find a quiet place, presumably because of all the fun and excitement going on the boat that he was on. Perhaps we'll hear more about it next week, or perhaps not. But in any case, that meant I had a solo show to do, and, you know, rather than do it right then and there, which I probably could have done, I put it off a little bit, and so, you know, Sunday went by, and then Monday went by, and now it's early Tuesday UTC. Most folks here where I am in Seattle would say it's Monday evening, but, you know, whatever. It's Tuesday UTC, and so you get a solo show for me. I have a few things to talk about on the agenda today. First, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the Obama tax deal that hit a few days back. And specifically, though, I'm not going to have all that much to say about the deal itself. I don't know that I have a huge amount to say about that, but I am going to talk a little bit about the reaction to it. Beyond that, sort of related, there was the Bernie Sanders in the Senate thing. I might talk about that. This is maybe a little bit more about WikiLeaks and some of the attacks by the anonymous group, as it were. And depending on what I feel like it, I may talk a little bit about how having a device like an iPhone could also apply to any smartphone, really, changes thoughts about things like standalone cameras and GPS, which is something I've talked about before, but it's been a little while. So, you know, I can talk about it again if I want to, because I'm just like that. In any case, I want to start out first with the whole thing about the taxes. About Obama's deal, where, look, fundamentally, here's what happened. Obama ended up striking a quote-unquote compromise with the Republicans they would get the extension of the Bush tax cuts, he would get some unemployment benefit extensions and some other things. And basically, liberals went apeshit. About the whole, he's capitulating, he's giving up everything, he's, he's giving them all they want, this is a giveaway to the rich, blah, 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 and how he has betrayed us, and there's all kinds of hyperbole going on, but basically all kinds of people saying that this proves, once again, that, it's just people being more and more disillusioned by Obama as sort of this liberal savior or whatever. So I wanted to start real quick by playing a little bit of a speech. And I'd set this all up so I could have done this with Yvonne here. But, you know, anyway, playing a little bit of a speech. This is from January 2008, right after Obama had won the Iowa caucuses. This is just a little clip of that speech, and I'm going to use it to illustrate a couple points. So here you go. Take a listen.
In lines that stretched around schools and churches, in small towns and in big cities, you came together as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents to stand up and say that we are one nation, we are one people, and our time for change has come. You said the time has come to move beyond the bitterness and pettiness and anger that's consumed Washington, to end the political strategy that's been all about division, and instead make it about addition, to build a coalition for change that stretches through red states and blue states. Because that's how we'll win in November, and that's how we'll finally meet the challenges that we face as a nation. We are choosing hope over fear. We're choosing unity over division and sending a powerful message that change is coming to America.
Okay, so first of all, I just want to say in the minute and a half you guys have been listening to that, in my world, almost 24 hours have passed because, of course, like, I got distracted and other things happened and, you know, whatever. Anyway, point is, if you listen to that speech, what you hear is all about compromise and bringing red and blue together and not having the argumentative, you know, red state versus blue state, Republican versus Democrat, all of this kind of stuff. And you'll note when he says change, 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 what is the change he's talking about? The change he is talking about is not advocating and pushing some sort of liberal agenda. No, the change he's talking about is a change to the way in which you go about advocating an agenda. And what he is pushing is the notion of finding common ground, of finding ways to work together, of finding ways to reduce the differences. And this isn't just this speech. This was one speech that happened to come up in my random rotation of podcasts and spoken word and music and blah, blah, blah that I listened to just this week. And it just was illustrative. But if you look at most speeches this man gave, including, of course, his famous speech at the 2004 Democratic Convention, which brought him to the national spotlight, which was all about this, but also including most of the speeches he gave during the campaign, also included his inaugural address, they are all of them. Well, let me step back. I shouldn't say all. I'm sure there are some that did not have this theme. But in quite a large number of his speeches, this was the big theme. Yes, he spoke about some of the things the Bush administration was doing badly. Yes, he talked about some things that were liberal agenda items. But the core element that was in everything, the core element that was his differentiator between Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primaries, was all about this. Was all about this approach of not being the hyper-partisan, but instead of looking for the elements of common ground and places you could work with the other side, even if they didn't want to work with you. Frankly, that's why I like the guy. And in many cases, I wish he was doing things that were a more radical departure from his predecessors. But whenever he was talking about change, almost every time, at least, that I remember, when he was talking about change, he was not talking about implementing some radical left-wing agenda. No! The change he was talking about was the tone of politics and the ability to work with the other side and all of that sort of thing. That was his common theme throughout everything. And if you read his freaking books, it's even more so. His first book was an autobiography kind of thing. It really didn't touch on this. I'm mainly talking about his second book, and I haven't read the books since then, including the little children's book that just came out. But anyway, if you read his second book, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, this is, again, the primary theme that comes through. In almost everything, he says, yes, I have a liberal agenda. I have things that are on the liberal side of the fence that I would like to get done. But I'm all about trying to figure out how to actually get things done and move things forward. He's all about the pragmatism. He's about not demonizing the other side. And that's been clear from the beginning. And so I continue to be baffled by all of these folks who think he would something else. And I understand, like, everybody sort of reads what they would like to see into candidates. But come on, the guy was pretty plain spoken about this. He was talking about this from the beginning. Apparently, you know, even his 2004 speech was rehashing speeches he'd given earlier in his political career in Illinois. This was always his theme. And so people are getting all upset and, oh my God, he gave away the farm. He's like, he's giving the Republicans everything they want. He always starts out by trying to giving something that you don't need to give and me give it later. And, you know, he came out in his little mini press conference after he announced this deal. And, you know, people have been speaking about how harsh it was towards the Democrats. And I understand this. I mean, he's basically saying, look, what do you expect me to do? You expect me to be ideologically pure and fight for things that the votes don't exist for in the Congress and therefore are not going to happen? Would you prefer, you know, a president who, you know, advocates all these things but then gets jack shit done? And he didn't use those words. But, or would you prefer somebody to get something done and says, okay, look, I can't get everything I want. I can't get the policy exactly the way I wish it would. But if I give on these things that the Republicans want, then I'll get some of it. I'll get something that gets through. And he pointed out the similarity to the healthcare debate and the purists on the left who he wanted a lot more than he ended up getting. And I think it's true in a lot of other areas. And you know, one blogger, and I apologize, I have no idea who it was, sort of pointed out that this was, you know, there are sort of two personas of Obama. There was this pragmatist persona, and then there was this sort of liberal savior persona. And that in the campaign, Obama had, you know, while talking about the pragmatist side of things, had certainly not discouraged the people who were building up this liberal savior viewpoint of him. And that now, what this press conference did is essentially him saying, look, I'm not that guy. I'm the pragmatic centrist. I'm the pragmatic centrist who's going to kick the ball forward and who is, you know, a little left to center, but I'm not, you know, your far left progressive type. He's the guy that really is closer to the middle. You know, and he's going to act like it, and he's going to keep reaching out to the Republicans, and he's going to keep making deals. And guess what? Once the Republicans have control of the House, that's going to be even more necessary to get anything done. Now, the alternative is, of course, him doing a lot of things as a unilateral executive, just deciding to do things without legislative support. And he may do that on occasion, on a few things that he cares about a lot. I don't know. Personally, I hope he doesn't. Even if that was the only way to implement a policy that I approved of. Because fundamentally, I don't want an executive who has that kind of power. Because even if it's being used today to support a policy that I approve of, in a couple years, it's going to be used to advocate all kinds of things I don't approve of. And frankly, you know, with Obama as he is, he'd probably use it to do a lot of things I don't like either. So I'm in favor of legislative checks and balances. I'm in favor of needing to get a broad consensus, you know, and having to get something that, you know, you can get more than 60 votes in the Senate in order to get done. Or at least 50. The filibuster thing maybe goes a little bit crazy the way it's working today. But yeah, I've said before, I'm not fundamentally opposed to supermajorities. But anyway, you know, again, I'm just baffled. I'm baffled by all the people who, like, act like this has been a big surprise over the last 2 years. The man is doing exactly what he said he was going to do. Exactly. And yes, in this case, he said, you know, he'd fight against extending the Bush tax cuts for the, you know, the people above 250,000, and that was his preference. And yes, he's now advocating for something that extends that tax cut to that group as part of a deal to get something else done, that other things he wanted to get done too. And because he did not want to let the other option happen, which was letting all the tax cuts expire, which a lot of people have advocated, by the way, just let them all expire, which would violate another of his promises to not raise taxes on those with incomes under $250,000. But again, what you see is you see someone who is not adverse to compromise and is not going to be, you know, ideologically purely driven and says, if I can't get everything exactly the way I want it to, I'm not going to get anything and I'm going to hold fast to my principles. No, this is not the guy that was elected. You know, he is fundamentally someone who's looking to figure out the way that you can get partway. Go a little bit further in direction. Will this compromise end up in a situation that's better or worse than we have now? If it improves things in the direction he wants and on net it's better than it is worse, then go for it. Even if it's not everything you want. Even if it includes some bits you don't like. That's the guy people elected. And apparently a big chunk of them didn't know that's who they were electing. Because they deluded themselves into believing that what Obama was what the Republicans were portraying him as opposed to what he was saying himself. And again, it just continues to baffle me. Why did these people think this? And, you know, and having said that, you know, if you look at the last couple of years, he's actually gotten a lot through. He's gotten a lot done. You may or may not agree with it. I disagree with a lot of it. But he's actually got a nice little track record of things that he's gotten to push through the legislature and policy changes he's made and things along those lines. And yes, many of them are incremental. They're not wholesale reimaginings of how everything happens. He's not that kind of guy. He is an incrementalist. He's one about slow, studied change. Where, you know, one term is just the art of the possible. It's not worrying about necessarily what the ideal, pure vision of what you'd like to do if you could restructure the whole world from scratch. It's not about that. It's about, okay, given the actual environment we have, what can we do? What can we do that'll make things better in some way? What can we do that helps this problem that we have? Not necessarily solves it entirely, but helps. Under the constraints we have of the real politics of the situation, of, you know, the fact that, yes, we're in a country that is in very many ways divided 50-50 on a large number of issues. And you have to do something for the whole population, not just, oh, we won the election, therefore we're in charge, we're going to do everything exactly the way we want. Because A, that's not really realistic. And B, I'd argue that's not really desirable either. You don't want a situation where the winner of the election can go and do a whole bunch of stuff and completely alienate the other half of the population. And some presidents maybe have done that. And, you know, people would argue that George W. Bush did a lot of that. He basically came in with the attitude of, I won, therefore I get to do what I want. And his party discipline was a lot better than Obama's. So he got a bunch of stuff done. And he was not hesitant in the slightest to use executive power without legislative or judicial support, for that matter. He was a big fan of unlimited executive power, or at least Dick Cheney was. And, you know. Anyway, another story. I don't think Obama fundamentally thinks about the process and doing it the way that, you know, it should be done. That's why you don't have him going out and saying, you know, I don't like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, therefore I'm going to ignore the law. Or even, therefore, I'm not going to appeal it when the court says he thinks it's his duty to appeal it through. And I think you can actually take him at his word for some of these things. A lot of people go into sort of like, well, he's saying that because he has to say it. Or he's saying that to get the middle for the election, but that's not what he really believes. Well, guess what? It is what he really believes. It is. The man said what he meant. The man actually said what he really believed. He wasn't lying. He wasn't trying to put on a face in order to get votes from people and then was really something else. And he was, you know, he wasn't the closet super liberal that, you know, Rush Limbaugh said he was. He really wasn't. He really is, you know, a centrist Democrat. And yes, he is left of center for a variety of different things. And he's certainly like, you know, he's certainly not going to be jumping up and down agreeing with Newt Gingrich for on everything. But, you know, it, fundamentally, what matters to him is, hey, let's push the ball down the road. Let's get something done. Let's, you know. And, you know, I don't know. I just... I'm going to start repeating myself. If I keep going, I probably already have. So let me wrap it up real quick. I also have to leave the computer again to go pick up Amy from a driving lesson and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, we'll wrap up this segment. The poem of the week is next, and then maybe I'll talk about a couple other things. But again, come on, people. Come on, liberals. The professional liberal class or whatever you are. This is what you signed up for. Ah! It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts whenever I see those folks upset by this. It's like, hey, I understand you hoped for something different, but really, it was hope. You were hoping he was lying. You were hoping that he was something other than what he said he was. And my God, the man actually was what he said. Personally, I think that's a good thing. Anyway, time for a break. Enjoy your poem of the week. I'll be back in a while. A couple minutes after the poem for you. Who knows how long it'll be for me. With some thoughts on a few other things. Enjoy your poem.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week. Brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
Two Thieves and Liar. By Neil de la Flor and Maureen Seaton. After Jim Dine. 1. The cat in the suit is almost invisible. 2. Three pals etched in bonding, two laughing, one coy. 3. Jaunty, jauntier, and propped up with a stick. 4. Is that Pinocchio's brother? 5. The one next to the wolf wearing a top hat? 6. What did the dude in the cat suit steal? Anybody? 7. The wolf has really long hair, like Snow White's. 8. The boy's shoelaces are untied, dangling. 9. That little boy can't be trusted. Do you believe me? 10. Is the sky really that blue? 11. I think their names are Imelda, Ida, and Lambda. 12. Everybody's authentic and off guard, like flowers. 13. Duh. 14. I'd be proud to date any one of them.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are. We're back. And, you know, my premonition on, you know, who knows how long it'll be till I'm really back, even though it's just a couple minutes for you guys, completely on track. So just to review real quick. We were supposed to record this podcast on Sunday. That didn't happen. On Monday, I did jack. Didn't do anything with the podcast. On Tuesday, I started the podcast and introduced Obama's speech. Then I played Obama's speech. And then on Wednesday, I talked about the Obama stuff. Then I went into a break. And then on Thursday, I recorded the poem of the week. And now, indeed, it is Friday when I am answering or coming back to actually talk about stuff. Not that any of you care. I'm just providing flavor, I guess. You know, flavor. Anyway, we are back. And, it is time for a couple other topics. And I know at the beginning of the show I had listed a few things of interest, but I think I am going to go back to WikiLeaks. I know. You've heard enough about WikiLeaks. You're all bored with WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks. Who the fuck cares about WikiLeaks? But, you know, I just wanted to mention at least briefly, you know, a few of the things that have been happening recently. So, one, you know, is just the big overreaction. It seems to be calming down a little bit now, but, you know, we've gotten things like the people in various parts of the government, mainly parts of the military, are now being blocked from even reading the New York Times and other major newspapers because they, in fact, have printed some of this information. The whole world can see it, but not those people, not the people in the government. And I realize there's a policy that says even if something classified leaks, it's still classified until it's officially declassified. But come on, that's idiotic. That's stupid. That's nonsensical. You know, you're stopping people from viewing dozens of legitimate news websites. Come on. Crazy. You also have there are noises in my head. There are noises in my head. Anyway, sorry, distracted by other stuff popping up on my screen. iTunes is complaining about something. Anyway, the House actually had a hearing that apparently I did not listen to any of it, but from all reports, they were actually fairly reasonable, deciding not to go, you know, batshit crazy about this like some other folks have been doing. And there have been a number of people coming out in terms of various human rights organizations and even some people in a few governments saying, you know, hey, you know, proportionality here. You know, this is an issue of free press and free distribution of information and blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, you have all this strange stuff going on in terms of, I'm never going to say the man's name right, Assange, and, his rape charges in Sweden. Now, a week ago, I don't know, I lose track of time, had mentioned, well, you know, it turns out this isn't really a rape case. It's, something... It's a sexual assault case on something regarding a condom, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I'll apologize for being a little bit hasty on that because it's taken a while for, you know, a clearer picture of exactly what was being charged there to happen. And I'll go into that in just a second. But a number of people have done analysis, and Nate Silver at 538.com, or he's in New York Times now. What the fuck? Come on. Sell out. Anyway. He did a little sort of Bayesian analysis of this. It says, basically, look, if you look at how infrequent charges are of this type, how infrequent extradition charges of this type are, all of that sort of thing, it's very, very unlikely that these charges would have been made if not for the global political situation, around the situation. And that's true. It seems like it's such an outlier mathematically from the normal prosecution of these type of cases that it is highly unlikely that this would have happened if he was just Joe Schmo guy. Having said that, that doesn't mean he didn't do it. Everything I have heard about this guy says he's an ass. You know, and you want to separate that from, you know, WikiLeaks itself and whether it's a good thing for some of this information to be out, whether or not the WikiLeaks stuff itself is a crime, blah, 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 blah. Ignore all that. The guy's a dick. The guy is a royal fucking dick. Okay? And so it is completely plausible, completely and totally plausible, that he is completely guilty of everything he's accused upon in the Swedish sexual harassment stuff. So, first of all, let me back up. And the actual charges here Because people are going to be going back and forth. Is it rape? Is it some sort of assault? Is it a crime that a condom broke? What the hell is going on here? Well, okay. Here's the answer. And I got this from a post on the Daily Dish. Get an exact time for you. Anyway, the title is "The Assange Rape Case Continued." It was posted, hurry up. I'll get that for you in a second. Anyway, it links to a BBC News article, that was posted on December 7th. So it's been around a while, but last updated today, that lists the actual charges against him. By the way, the Daily Dish article posted December 16th, 7:34 p.m. Eastern, I believe. Anyway, the actual charges. He used his body weight to hold down Miss A in a sexual manner. He had unprotected sex with Miss A when she had insisted on him using a condom. He molested Miss A in a way, quote, designed to violate her sexual integrity. And fourth, he had unprotected sex with Miss W while she was asleep. So, look, you know, this all sounds like, you know, unconsensual sex to me. And one of the key points that has been brought up is sort of the notion of withdrawing consent after the fact. And, you know, if Miss A in this case had consented to have sex, but then a condom broke and she said stop and he continued, then that's just as much rape as if she'd said no from the beginning, etc. So, first of all, look, yeah, I have no idea what happened here, whether these charges have merit or not. With these kinds of cases, I'm always a little concerned in terms of how you prove it, you know, because whenever it's a he said, she said thing, you know, I always feel a lot more comfortable if there's additional evidence, like hard physical evidence, but as opposed to just people's words. However, sort of as a fundamental thing, I don't think anybody should ever be convicted of anything based only on testimony. There should always be physical evidence. And if there isn't, fuck it. You're done. Anyway, because people aren't trustworthy in general. Sometimes they are. Lots of people are. Lots of people aren't. You never know. Anyway, having said that, he may well be guilty. He probably is guilty. Screw it. He probably is. It certainly fits within his personality. There was some additional stuff posted on Gawker today with some stalky emails he'd sent somebody, a few years back. When he was in his 30s and he was pursuing a 19-year-old, and, you know, it's just creepy kind of stuff, you know. And now I'm saying this having, I'll admit there have been times in the past I've sent creepy, stalky type emails, and I apologize to anybody who might be listening who may have been a recipient of those, although I don't think anybody is listening. Anyway, but I apologize. That's not, you know, it is within the realm of possibility that he is guilty of that doesn't mean, you know, and the fact that this is way abnormal and that normally charges would never be brought for this kind of case, and it certainly, or maybe they'd be brought, but there certainly wouldn't be an urgency about getting him extradited right away, blah, 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 blah. Having said that, that doesn't mean that these charges are warranted, that it shouldn't be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But that's a completely separate issue from anything that's going on with WikiLeaks. And putting them together just muddies the situation, and people are like, oh, well, you know, this guy has been arrested for rape, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Completely separate. The more this is separated from this one asshole dude, and the more it's talking just in general about the documents themselves, what they reveal, whether or not they should have been revealed, all that kind of stuff, the better. The whole thing with Julian Assange is just a distraction. I will point out one additional article that was linked from Andrew Sullivan's Daily Dish that's very good to read on this and put some of the rape stuff in perspective. It's kateharding.info, and she made a post on December 16th. Is there a time on this? December 16th, sometime. Entitled, "Some Shit I'm Sick of Hearing Regarding Rape and Assange." And it's basically talking about, whether or not these rape allegations should be taken seriously, what this all means in conjunction with the WikiLeaks stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is a good post. Anyway, moving on. The trickle of information out of the leaks themselves continues. There is some interesting stuff there, and a lot of the initial conversations was, there's nothing really interesting here. It's just diplomats doing their business, and there's certainly a lot of diplomats doing their business in here, but it certainly seems that on the flip side of that, there's certainly a lot more exposure to certain types of what diplomats just doing their business is, and we can decide whether some of that's, really appropriate or not. And so I as has been obvious, I'm completely in favor of, all this shit coming out. And I understand the notion of let's not just post exactly the stuff that is indication of dirt, because when you've got like this many documents, it's a hell of a lot easier to just release everything and then let people figure it out. Now, in part, that's kind of what WikiLeaks is doing here. The actual public releases are being timed with major media outlets releasing the things that they've found interesting, where, your major media outlets around the world have been going through the full range of documents looking for the juiciest stuff, and they're releasing that first. So even though they're only 1 or 2% of the way through all of the documents, it may well be that the most interesting 1 or 2% are the ones that have been released so far. Anyway, I'm not enough about WikiLeaks. I guess those were my main points. I don't know. I hope that the government continues to back off for the notion of going after WikiLeaks for various things. Because it just sets an incredibly bad precedent in terms of what that means for a free press in general, and more specifically for the expanded free press that isn't just major corporations that own newspapers, but is anybody who can publish on the internet. And I think it's going after this kind of thing is incredibly irresponsible. Yvonne said on the podcast the other week that, if he was in the government spot, he would also be doing everything he could to keep additional stuff from being released here and to shut these folks down. But what they're doing is fundamentally not anything different than a responsible press should be doing. It's what the New York Times should be doing. And in many cases, they're getting these scoops and the major media isn't. The major media should be. And they should be going after this stuff too. But, you can't come up with a coherent set of guidelines that would shut down an organization like this that wouldn't shut down the New York Times for doing something similar. And I think you got to give the respect to this kind of stuff. And also just governments around the world are going to have to deal with the same thing that individuals around the world and record companies and media companies have been dealing with, which is, in the digital world, information sharing is freaking easy. Data will get around. You can try as you might to keep things secret, and you certainly will succeed at some things, but things will leak and people will know about them, and like it or not, because a lot of people are like, how can we possibly do our business if everybody knows every detail of what we're thinking? Well, and yeah, it's going to be harder, and but that's reality now. That's the world we're going to live in. And it's going to get easier and easier and easier, not harder and harder, to distribute this kind of stuff. It's going to be easier to do it anonymously. It's going to be easier, And there may be some backlash and there may be some backsliding, but the general trend will be more information will be out there. Less and less places that will be completely private. Less and less places where you can feel sure that you are saying something and nobody but the person you're talking to is going to know what you said. I mean, the presidential candidates found that out in 2008 when various things they said at sort of closed fundraising meetings ended up on the internet, because guess what? Somebody recorded it on their phone. Yep. That's going to happen. And certainly things that really are truly top secret have additional layers of protection on them that make them much harder to leak and probably much more serious when it does happen. This last batch of stuff from WikiLeaks was in a system that apparently hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people had access to. And how secret is something really if that many people have access to it? Confidential? I don't know. It depends what you mean by the words, but come on. If that many people know about it, somebody's going to leak something sometime. If it's not through a document to WikiLeaks, it's, you know, telling stuff to their friends. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break. I feel like taking a break. Oh, the jingle, by the way, is not Santa's sleigh. It's my dog, Roscoe. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break. There are a couple more topics I think I'll spend a couple minutes on and then wrap it up. Because, you know, I'm doing that yammering thing I do. Okay, we'll be right back. Enjoy your commercial about, well, that's not really a commercial because no one's paying me. As I've said before, if anybody wants to pay me, please, just drop me a line. I'd be absolutely thrilled. Anyway, let's see. Oh, you know, because I'm recording this sort of live as I'm doing it, I can let you in on an additional, you know, aspect that no one will care about, but I'm going to do anyway, which is I am going to pick which spot I am going to put in place. So I currently have 8 spots in rotation. Number 1 is a promo for the No-Tell Motel, recorded by Yvonne. Number 2, a promo for Creepy Classics that was recorded by Amy Roney. Number 3, a promo for Africa Focus, recorded by me. This is a break song by me. Then a promo from The Valley, a radio station in Ligonier, run by my friend Ron. And then Babel, another thing I did. Then Effalump, another thing I did. And then a Deck the Flu thing from the CDC. So there are 8 of those. So I'm going to random.org to generate a number between 1 and 8. Da-da-da-da! And the number is 5, which will be the promo for The Valley. So we'll be right back after this.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620 and LigonierRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and turned it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LigonierRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, and here I am again. And, oh my God, a whole day has not passed by. It's only been like the minute or so that the spot was playing, maybe slightly longer, but only slightly. You know, so I'm amazed. Anyway, you know, I talked about Obama and the tax deal and how all the liberals think about Obama and that stuff. I talked about Assange, and I talked about how transparency, you know, you just have to get used to it, and WikiLeaks is just the beginning. A couple things I didn't talk about. One was, and I'm going to make these kind of brief. Yeah, I always say that, and then I go on for 20 minutes. Whatever. Bernie Sanders, this is related to the Obama stuff. You know, he did his little stand-up pseudo-filibuster, and I certainly don't agree with Bernie Sanders on a lot of stuff, but thank you for actually doing things the old-fashioned way and you sitting there and making a point and making your speech. You know, I wish more was like that and less was the, you know, parliamentary bullshit. Let's agree that we're going to say we're going to filibuster, so we're just going to not do it and stuff like that. And of course, the rules are set up so that, you know, the whole filibuster thing is weighted in a weird way. So, like, you know, this minority party that's doing the filibuster really only has to have one or two people on the floor. But in order to, you know, maintain that and whatever, the majority party has to keep a much bigger presence, blah, blah, blah. I say, you know, lock all these guys in, make them all be on the floor at all times, actually listen to each other, make them actually converse with each other, lock them away from outside influence. Like, from the moment they're elected, don't let them talk to anybody for 6 years. Just make accept each other and see what comes out. Of course, we can't actually do that. I'm being somewhat facetious, but it would be fun to see. Just like a presidential debate where you just put the two candidates in a locked room with a television camera, a hidden television camera that they don't know where it is, and see what happens if you leave them in there for 2 or 3 hours. That'd be really fun. Of course, they'd probably both just sit there. And it would be even better if they didn't know they were being recorded or broadcast. But, you know, that would be really hard to arrange, you know? Anyway, I do have to go in just a minute. I just got a text. I have to go pick people up and do things. I did want to mention a couple other things real fast. Real fast, I promise, real fast! The LOIC things that the Anonymous group were using to do denial of service attacks on companies who had spurned WikiLeaks in one way or another. Surprise, surprise, they are not themselves anonymous unless you take other precautions. A couple of the people doing it were picked up, specifically, I think, one in Europe who's, I don't know if he was one of the ringleaders as well, but he was using the tool, and guess what? It was easy to find him. They looked up his IP address, and boom, you know. I don't know that this kind of denial of service attack is the right response. I don't approve of most of the, you know, the companies who've sort of just said, oh, we're not dealing with WikiLeaks. Now, as a private company, they can decide to do whatever the fuck they want, and I'll defend their right to do so as well. I just wish they'd made a different decision. But the response to it isn't these little denial of service things. It's not helping in the end. And, you know, it's not going to help get the result that the people doing it want. It's just putting on a stupid little show and making you look like idiots. It's like the people who protest by blocking a street and blocking traffic. And you may have made a lot of people aware of whatever the hell point you're trying to make, but you've also pissed off all those people and made them less sympathetic to your cause because you just caused them a hassle. It's the same kind of thing here. The other thing I was going to talk about is just sort of, you know, the diminishing usefulness of standalone cameras and GPSs in the world of smartphones. But we'll save that for later. They both still have uses, obviously, just less and less so for, like, the normal user. And Google came out with a tablet thing, or not a tablet, a Chrome-based netbook. And, yeah, I'm not going to talk about that either. So since I'm not talking about any of these things at length, and since I've just gotten a text that's saying I have to go, I guess I'll let you guys go. And this was a pretty useless last segment, huh? Oh, well. Next week will be more interesting. Yvonne should be back, hopefully. And we'll have a rollicking discussion of whatever's in the news at that point. Maybe some Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's supposed to be up for a vote this weekend. Maybe the final results from whatever the Senate gets done with the START Treaty, the DREAM Act, these things. Maybe there'll be some fun new tech stuff. They announced a date for the Mac App Store to launch. You know, stuff. Stuff always happens. Every week stuff happens. So we'll talk about it. In the meantime, email me. Abelsmay@abelsmay.com for any questions, thoughts, comments, bribes, suggestions, offers of free stuff. I guess that would be a bribe, but I guess it's only really a bribe if I only get the free stuff if I do something. Those are fine, but if you want to just give me free stuff to give me free stuff, hey, absolutely cool too. Absolutely cool. I like stuff. I like money. All good things. Anyway, email me if you have any thoughts. Tell your friends to listen. We like listeners. And tune in next week. Goodbye.